Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, June 26th, 2003. Today's session is entitled The Biology of Violence, Session 4 of Demystifying the Teen Violence Epidemic for Communities of Faith, presented by Gary Coles, number KOG 2003-04. Let's listen in.
But we have to know the long-term consequences too. And if you read the book, Ritalin is Not the Answer, you'll see in there that what's called ADHD is mainly very active children and somewhat inattentive children. And you put that combination and you can call that a disease or you can call that normal. And is medication the first thing we should go toward, or should we do the nutritional approach? That's right, but it is. And I bet you it's almost always the first thing that happens. And even the schools are insisting that you go to the doctor and you get Ritalin. So that's totally incautious approach, because there are nutritional and behavior modification methods of dealing with it, but not in our managed care system. And what does a potentially addicting drug do long term to the developing brain? The drug industry has not studied that. They don't want to study that, because they know that's going to not be good. So there's a much higher incidence of cocaine and nicotine addiction in Ritalin-treated kids. So if you're giving your kid Ritalin, you can maybe expect a significant risk of cocaine addiction. You know, they get that stimulant effect, and then they're off the drug, and they want that stimulant effect. So maybe they try other drugs that will mimic that. So, and long term, the academic performance of Ritalin-treated kids is not necessarily improved. In fact, it's in some studies, it's actually less. So long term, it might even be a detriment. So we need to be cautious there too. We don't know what's the long term effect. There are. There are. Oh yes, there's studies there that get censored out. Anything that kind of runs counter to the established norms, you know, the what's regarded as a standard of care, doesn't get in the mainstream literature, because the mainstream literature, the American Psychiatric Journal and JAMA, et cetera, are highly subsidized by the drug industry. You just look page through one of those, and it's just jammed with drug industry propaganda. It's touting the good parts about the drugs, and never the, and so they have editorial control, quasi-editorial control over what gets published. And so the journals that are mainstream, I never hear about this stuff. You have to dig this out of the basic science journals and the alternative literature, et cetera. So, and there's plenty of it out there. plenty of it out there. But yeah, I do emphasize caution. But the other thing that's important to know is that in the last 20 years, since Reagan kind of watered down the FDA with his appointees, the drug industry does not like regulation. They hate the old FDA that was cautious about letting drugs get on the market too fast. And since Reagan, they're just pumping out drugs right and left, and it only takes one or two clinical studies that only last 6 or 8 weeks to get FDA marketing approval. Prozac only had two studies that showed modest improvement, effectiveness, and relative safety. But they had to go to the 6 week or 4 week point in the study to prove that. And then it got on the market, knowing full well that people are going to be on it for months or years, and some people are still on it after 10 years and can't get off of it. The FDA did not require proof of long-term safety or long-term effectiveness, and that's the reality that we're dealing with. We're taking drugs that they haven't tested for safety for more than 8 weeks. Yeah, we've been doing that all. Yeah, we've been doing that all week. Yeah, we've been doing that all week. And it's multifactorial. And one of my handouts, and one of the purposes of this teen violence and suicide prevention program—prevention, not just early recognition or treatment. This is looking at root causes, so we can keep our kids from doing the suicidal or feeling suicidal long term. It's not easy, and I can't. You know, say that in the 2 minutes we have left. it's a multifactorial thing. Violence in the entertainment industry or age-inappropriate violence or age-inappropriate abuse of sex. The World Wrestling Federation is the most popular preteen boys TV program in America. You know, we're manufacturing sexual perverts. Because if you ever watch World Wrestling Federation, it's sexually inappropriate and physically inappropriate. And these kids are watching that, and they're watching slasher movies. Six of the weekends, some households have six, you know, R-rated movies for three-year-olds. Every bit of cruelty gets embedded in the brain. It changes the structure and the architecture and your capacity for empathy, maybe your capacity to believe in a loving God even when you're exposed to violence. And then across the world, you know, we got kids in refugee camps in Iraq right now. You know, there might only be, you know, 5, 6, 8, 10,000 Iraqis that died, but multiples more than that were traumatized by the fear of the bombs, the fear of the American soldiers, the toxic depleted uranium and plutonium in the desert sands from the last Gulf War. It's just full of radioactivity in there that is causing, you know, caused 200,000 of our own GIs to now be declared disabled and getting money from the VA for a disability directly related to the depleted uranium and the neurotoxins and the injections and who knows what. There's a dozen different factors that have caused them to be seriously ill, immunodeficient, cancers, and just feeling, you know, lousy. War is toxic to children's brains, and it's even toxic to our young soldiers. You know, so you don't even have to have a developing brain or body to be poisoned by the stuff that they breathe and drank and the shots they got. So multiple things. And then the diet. The book, The Crazy Makers. The Crazy Makers, how the food industry is destroying our brains and harming our children. It's a very important book, The Crazy Makers. Nutritional additives. Monosodium glutamate is a neurotoxin. And it can cause seizures and probably subtle, maybe a few cells get knocked off every time a little baby eats Gerber's that has MSG in it. You know, Gerber's put MSG in it, so it makes food taste good. For a long time, they put MSG in it, and, you know, monosodium glutamate is sort of a salty taste, and it makes things taste good, but it's a neurotoxin, and it also caused babies to sleep less. I mean, they proved that babies on MSG-tainted baby food slept far shorter periods of time per year, and you know what sleep deprivation does? You know, sleep deprivation can make you crazy. I mean, you can cause people to be psychotic if you sleep deprive them enough. That's just a fact. And then there's aspartame, NutraSweet. You know, NutraSweet is a neurotoxin. It's one of the factors in the Gulf War syndrome. They sent over just gobs and gobs of NutraSweet-laden diet pop over to the desert in the first desert storm. You know, out of the goodness of their heart, they gave this pop. At 85 degrees, NutraSweet turns into methanol, wood alcohol. A significant portion of wood alcohol is manufactured out as NutraSweet heats up, or the aspartame heats up. And, you know, wood alcohol causes blindness in high doses or kidney disease. You know, drunks that used to, you know, take wood alcohol instead of ethanol alcohol, they could kill people with that. So that's in the mix of the Gulf War syndrome, and that's in the mix of kids who drink a lot of diet pops. And then caffeine. What does caffeine do to little children's brains who aren't hardwired yet? You know, all these nerves are always, they're making connections. They're making normal connections unless they're inhibited from making those normal connections by nutrient deficiencies or toxins. And we don't know much about that, but it happens. Yeah.
And when we drink aspartame, our bodies are 98 degrees, and so does that warm up the aspartame?
Good question. I bet that's never been tested. But in the lab, the aspartame breaks down into aspartic acid and glutamic acid. I think those are the common ones, which are those are psychostimulants. You give either one of those to a person, and you're alert. But it also can be toxic if you give it chronically or too much. And then what happens to sugar? You know, in one can, 12-ounce can of Coca-Cola, there's 10 to 12 teaspoons of sugar. Try to take 10 or 12 teaspoons of raw sugar sometime and see how you feel. Your blood sugar goes way the heck up. Your insulin goes way heck the up. the blood sugar goes down because of oftentimes the insulin overshoots, and so you have hyperglycemia symptoms, and then you have hypoglycemia symptoms, and you feel awful. And kids are chugging down, you know, the even if it's not NutraSweet laden. So I'm giving you a lot of bad news here. I'm sorry, but our kids are in trouble, and it isn't all because we're abusive, that some of us are abusive parents, or some parents are abusive, I should say. We talked about that yesterday, post-traumatic stress disorder and child rearing qualities, the authoritarian child rearing and neglectful child rearing and the indulgent child rearing methods. And those are all factors in there too. The more violence they get from parental figures, whether it's or even from kids in the neighborhood, you know, the cruelty in the school hallways and the cruelty in the neighborhoods and the cruelty they see on television or violent video games, depleting serotonin because of tryptophan poor diets. And you go into McDonald's diet is lousy in tryptophan. The other thing about right in here, this is almost all fat. The lining of every cell of the body actually is largely fat. And when we are eating a toxic fat or manufactured fat, which is what margarine is, and the partially hydrogenated fatty acids are synthetic fat. They take liquid vegetable fat, and then they harden it by adding hydrogen bonds, so it doesn't get rancid and it gets firmer. But the brain doesn't know what to do with that, and it makes the cells less pliable, makes them harder, firmer, more rigid. And so there's a subtle change in how the synapse works too. If that's not pliable, then the synapse doesn't work quite as well. We don't know how affected that is. But when you have synthetic fat all over the grocery shelves, and synthetic fat doesn't get rancid, so it has a long shelf life. It can be transported the 1,800 miles that most of our food goes, and it doesn't spoil on the shelf, so the chips and the bread, the pastries, et cetera, don't spoil, but it's not fat that the brain wants. Now, it isn't lethal, it doesn't kill us, but it maybe makes us not think quite as well, or not sleep quite as well, as not have the impulse control quite as well, or whatever. So the food industry, by its additives and its dyes, and all those dyes, there's all sorts of flavor enhancers. Don is reading a book called Fast Food Nation, and it's about Fast Food Nation, and it's about the industry's manipulation of our food supply with synthetics, the different flavor enhancers that only, you know, a few parts per trillion, but it makes a difference in how the food smells and tastes and looks. And then all there's colors, the gummy bears. You know, gummy bears have also, you read the gummy bears, the yellow dye number 5, red dye number 4, those dyes. Those all have little effects on the receptor sites of our cells, not just the brain cells either. It's probably our lymphatic cells or our bone marrow cells or liver cells. So all these little toxins, and then we're not even getting into the synthetic sprays for the Scotch Guard and all the plastics thing. So if our kids are going down the tube, we have a responsibility to understand some of the reasons why it's happening. And the church, and here we are at Holden, most of us are Lutherans, do we have a responsibility in protecting the brains of our children, who we hope are going to be altruistic, Christ-like figures with empathy and the refusal to be executioners for the local Führer? We have to also be aware of the spiritual effect of abnormal brain cells. And that's real, that's real. It isn't just how we, you know, whether we're depressed or not, it's whether we feel empathy for the suffering human that needs our mercy and our help. That's the essence of Jesus' message. You know, you see someone suffering and you offer help just because there's need. Don't care if it's Iraqi Muslim or Aryan nation or your fellow human down the road or in the pew. Jesus offered help to the suffering humans, no matter what their nationality or race or creed was. And that's a responsibility of our church. Whether we're nonviolent or not, and we're running out of time. I have a slide here that talks about the massive increase in completed suicides. You probably need to see this. massive incidents and completed suicides. In the very studies that were done to get marketing approval for from the FDA, they studied, this investigator studied the 71,000 patients who were involved in the studies that ultimately resulted in the FDA granting marketing approval for the drugs. And the drugs were, these are completed suicides, not just attempts, okay. Clinical trials for submission to the FDA, Dr. Kahn did this, 71,000 people. The background rate for suicide in the general population in the United States is 11 per 100,000. That crosses all, you know, age groups and gender. And in the Zyprexa, Risperdal, Seroquel group, these were clinical trials, and they excluded people with suicidality. So if you had suicidal thoughts, then you didn't get in the study. So these were basically non-suicidal. They were depressed, but they were non-suicidal. So, many of them had been on other drugs and then were withdrawn from those drugs to get in the trial on the new drug, which were double-blind. Some people got placebo, and some people got the drug. A couple of them were comparison with an old drug to a new drug. But they were all non-suicidal patients, and they were basically on average 8-week trials. Still, you know, 8 weeks is the standard. You get something safe and effective for 8 weeks, then you can get on the market and give it to people for a year or 10. And we don't know; they haven't been tested to be safe for a year or 10. In the Zyprexa antipsychotic group, there were 752 per 100,000 suicides. Versus this, now that's not probably a totally fair comparison. You know, the general population aren't all depressed. But still, that's a 6,800% increase in completed suicides in the Zyprexa group, and that was extrapolated. You know, they only did 8-week studies, so they had to multiply, you know, by 26 or so X number of weeks. In the Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, Luvox, Celexa group, there were 718 per 100,000 suicides in that group. And for the Suruzone and Wellbutrin and Remeron, it was 425. You know, many, many multiples beyond what you would sort of expect. Interesting is that the people on placebo had 1,700. They have even a higher incidence of suicide, completed suicides in the placebo group. Well, that was because they were probably withdrawing. When you withdraw from a psychotropic drug, you feel awful. You know, and you, sometimes you have side effects from the withdrawal that are intolerable, and you kill yourself. Say again. Say that again.
That's your control group, is what you say. That's your control group for the study.
Yeah.
And so, if your control is 1,700 per 100,000,
yeah,
then you're reducing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is the raw data. You know, you can draw your own conclusions from it, and the 1,700 per 100,000 completed suicides, that's extrapolated. You had to do some mathematical manipulations of the information, but 700 per 100, that's less than 1%. It's hard to, in a study, it's hard to measure something that's less than 1%, because most of the clinical studies had a couple hundred people in it. That would mean maybe one or two patients committed suicide, and you'd say, well, they probably would have committed suicide anyway, so you kind of discount that. So it's easy to miss, you know, 1 out of 100 suicides in a study that the clinical trials only have 100 patients in it. But yeah, this is, yeah, you can interpret this in various ways, but you need to pay attention to that. The FDA didn't pay attention to that. But even more serious is the reality here. These are the attempted suicide in the next year in those patients. Yeah. So do psychotropics actually increase the risk of suicide? In the antipsychotic group, 5% of those patients attempted suicide in the following year. This is his numbers. 3.7% in the antidepressant trials will make an attempt. And then the anxiety disorder is 1.2%. Now, 11 out of 100,000 is 0.01%. And when something goes up to 1%, that's a massive increase. If something goes up to 5%, that's really serious. Now, I don't know what the attempted suicide rate in the general population, I'm sure that's much higher than 0.0, or than 11. But it's just, you know, does that make us, should we have caution about that? Of course we should have caution. Now, maybe this is completely off the wall and inaccurate, like you say. Maybe these are being skewed to support the argument that synthetic chemicals in the brain aren't all good. I think that can be said, and we have to be conscious of that. So if we're taking a medication or submitting to surgery, we need to have fully informed consent. We have that right. We physicians or we patients have the privilege of having informed consent. And so we should ask, well, what happens after 8 weeks? Or what happens if I'm on this drug for 10 years? And we have to honestly say we don't know. The drug industry isn't interested in knowing. They just want the drug out there, et cetera. So
that in the over-the-counter issues that are available, those haven't been studied comparably to give the kind of information you're saying.
Sure. Yeah, and
we're missing data.
Sure.
The health food industry and the alternative medicine things are not studied at all, not regulated
at all. Yeah. Well, and they are. There's a bunch of studies out there, but you have to dig for them in the alternative literature.
Those studies are any more better than the studies that are used to support the FDA.
Yeah.
It takes 5 years and $500 million to get a drug tested. So I think there's very different information than what you're
sure.
saying.
Yeah.
I don't know what's true.
Yeah.
But there certainly is information that's contrary to what you're proposing.
Yeah. Read Prozac Backlash, or Your Drug May Be Your Problem, or Talking Back to Prozac, or Mad in America. There's a whole bunch of great investigative literature out there that are looking at the truth, looking for the truth. We need that truth. Right now we're operating blind. You know, if we're taking drugs that haven't been approved or proved to be safe for more than 8 weeks, we got to question that. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, I think the point is that whether it's OTC or prescription, whatever we put into our bodies affects our brains.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's in the food we eat or whether it's in the medication we take, whatever we put in our bodies affects us.
Yeah.
And so we have to be mindful of what we put in our bodies.
Yeah, that's right. So we need good psychotherapy. We need a good diagnosis, first of all. I mean, we need to spend time. Patients deserve to have time spent with them, and they need that. I mean, they deserve to have lots of time, because these are complicated issues, depression and homicide, aggression, just terribly complex issues. And we can't deal with that in 5 or 10 or 15 minutes to get to the bottom of something. And so we need good psychotherapy. And I have slides that we can talk about the comparison between good psychotherapy without drugs and then drugs, and what the relapse rates are. It's much higher with drugs alone. So there's a new study in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry that showed that use of antidepressants is going to actually aggravate depression long term. People are actually get on the drugs, they can be depressed much longer than that in comparison than the people that didn't have the drugs. So there's a lot of evidence coming out here, but it's not popular with the conventional wisdom, which is pro-drug. So I'm sorry if I upset anybody, but the truth shall make us free, they say. I think Jesus said that. If we're willing to use it ourselves on our mature, fully hardwired brain, that's one thing. But when we're allowing synthetic chemicals of unproven effectiveness and unproven safety to be used on growing brains that aren't hardwired yet, that's a totally other thing. And I know that the kids I see that are on these drugs sort of have deadened souls somehow. There's just something. A lot of parents say those are the don't give a damn drugs. They call them the I don't give a damn drugs. Get on the Prozac and they don't give a damn anymore. And I have patients tell me that all the time. So I just didn't feel the same, and I was a little more abrupt, and I didn't feel down so much, but I didn't feel up so much either. It kind of narrowed my pattern of how I felt. Yeah, it's time to go. So now let's keep up the conversation, and I apologize for length, but see you down the road. At 1 o'clock, there's a really important video about the history of Christian nonviolence in the fireside room. It's really important. Come on up, and there's some handouts here if you haven't been to my sessions before, you can take one of each. Okay, we're done. Can you turn on the lights? Yeah, sure. You can grab one of each. Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, this, I'm a bringer of bad tidings.
Don't shoot the mess. Yeah, don't.